Hey guys, welcome to this episode of Torkum Talk. Today we have Nick Shivers, who is a good friend and business colleague of mine. He is one of, not the best, Portland Metro realtor who is a huge philanthropist doing a big program called Sell a Home, Save a Child that has been spreading across the country and parts of the world. We get into philosophy, faith, how it applies to business, how some people in Nicaragua can be poor and happier than ever, and other people in the United States and other Western regions can have everything they'd ever want and are miserable, and why that is. So some difficult, great questions are asked and pondered over in this discussion. And also what we're doing right now for this week is we're giving away our three tools on how to make your Facebook ads convert. If you're mad at them for not making you the money that you want them to on Instagram or Facebook or Messenger or WhatsApp, then my team, being published by Facebook twice internationally, put together this video course on how to do what we do, and we'll shoot it over to you for free. Just shoot Mazama Media or myself a direct message and we'll get that over to you. And without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Nick Shivers and I.
Remember the 2005 is when I bought my land in Nicaragua because I was going to build a resort there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a...
You were going to build a resort?
Yep.
And what happened?
When you have a business plan of a napkin and a bottle of rum and like Jimmy Buffett songs,
uh-huh.
Traditionally those business ideas don't go well. So the resort thing went... My business partner was supposed to be his uncle was supposed to be the president.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't go the way it was supposed to go either.
Okay.
So it went up in flames, but I always believe God has a plan. And the reason I was down there was not to build a resort. It was to help facilitate getting Via Esperanza.
Sweet.
So basically, I was going down there quite frequently, in Nicaragua, just like in any third world country, it's connections. You got to make your connections. And a Yahoo like me was sitting with like the second in command of Nicaragua.
Okay.
I remember one time I took my wife and we were on a Nicaraguan gunboat, a military gunboat, and they're showing us property.
Okay.
And my wife's like, are we going to live? I'm like, yeah, this is great. We're cruising around with the captain of the Nicaraguan Navy, and they're showing us land.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, they probably thought I was a billionaire, which I wasn't. So, but they thought I was. So that was great. That being said, fast forward, about 3 years. 3 years in the making with connections and stuff like that. And as you know, what happened in the States is the real estate world collapsed at the same time.
You were in real estate then?
Yep. Okay. I've been in real estate. At the same time, the election in Nicaragua was going down and my business partner's family member did not win. So all the money, the time, the connections that we had just kind of went kaboom. And it just, I still have the land. I still have 100 acres with a little beach house. That's what I'm telling you. You should go down and use it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's beautiful. But in the meantime, we were introduced to a lady by the name of Gloria. And Gloria, she's really not a lady. I call her a bad to the bone angel because she's tough. Tough as nails. And she took me and my wife and my friend Ricky Guadarrama and his wife through La Chareca, and that La Chareca is called The Dump. And it was, imagine, Hades, the gates of hell.
Right.
That's what it was.
Down you go to Hades.
Oh, you could see.
But where were you?
In Managua.
So down you go to Managua.
Yeah, yeah. It was, young boys sniffing glue, burning tires, buzzards everywhere, almost blotting out the sun.
This does sound like something out of Homer's Odyssey.
It's like... It's very surreal.
Sure.
Almost like it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And then the worst thing.
So you all senses are...
Oh, everything.
Yeah. Sight. You're smelling the burnt rubber.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like trash. You're probably feeling some heat.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's 90, 95 degrees, 90%.
Not including the burning tires.
90% humidity.
Oh, that sounds nice.
The trucks, the big sounds. I mean, you're like, what?
So down you are in Hades.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you're literally there. And you're like, you know, I had two kids, probably, I think, Keegan's 17 now. So, you know, he was 7, 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing that I remember saying, I do not want to see this, was little girls getting into these garbage trucks. And
to do what?
Basically, the families were selling the little girls to the truck drivers, so the truck drivers would give them the first pick of the garbage.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was...
Selling the little
their bodies.
That's what I
yep.
fortunately
thought. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And it was... I wish I could say I wanted to be a hero, but I really just wanted to say, I get it. I want to leave. I mean, because that right there, you don't want to see it.
No.
But the reality is, I was kind of talking with my buddy. He goes, remember these girls, we can leave. They're not leaving, man. And Gloria looks at us and she goes, that's what I want to change. That's what I want to change. Hmm. And, so that was that. One way or the other, you can leave there as a scumbag that never helps anybody and just forget it, or it can change you the other way. You're like, I'm going to do something about that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just one of those little girls, but
once a lot.
Yeah. One kid, if you can change one kid's life, they can change a life and they can change a life. Now, that's a very sad story, but I'm going to fast forward now.
What year was that?
It was like 2008.
Okay.
2008, 2009. Fast forward just recently, there's 56 girls that were taken out of that and put in Villa Esperanza. Villa Esperanza, it's basically the Village of Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And those girls that were taken out of that dump basically changed the culture of the dump. They came back into the community, was teaching, that's not what you do. And they changed the culture, the girls in as Central America, Nicaragua, that income, I mean, that class, sure. It was very low, no power, but they came back and they changed the culture of the dump where they didn't do that to their kids. Now, did it still happen? Yes, but it was less out in the open. And those girls, I can remember, Perla was the first girl that we ever took out. Perla now is a beautician. Mm-hmm. She's a teacher, and she helps some of the girls.
In Nicaragua. So how'd you get them out?
So basically what we did is we were able to team up with an organization called Forward Edge International, mm-hmm. Joanna Fuso. And we basically got some documentaries, and we raised a bunch of funds. And Joe had been doing that since the 1980s, coming in and helping, going deep. Not, you know, as sometimes you can spend money, but that doesn't mean that you're helping, really.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe's philosophy and our philosophy at Sell a Home, Save a Child is, it's the nationals that are going to change it. It's not Nick, the American, that's going to solve the world's problem. No, I'm going to come along somebody that has a vision and a passion for their people. And then we come alongside with accountability and a few systems and, of course, some funds to be sure. And that's how I think you make a lasting difference. And if I would say today, if it was only Perla, remember there's 56 girls that were taken out of that dump.
Mm-hmm.
But even if it was just Perla, it was the best thing that, and it changed my life for the better.
So, yeah, what are some of the things that you ended up seeing? Because you said we've had a lot of discussions before, and you were just in, was it the Dominican Republic?
Haiti. Haiti,
okay,
yep.
So their neighbor. So you're in Haiti, and you were doing philanthropy there, yep. Correct? So what were you doing there?
We were down there with, again, Sell a Home, Save a Child, and we were with Hands and Feet Project.
Mm-hmm.
Some rock, Mark Stewart, he used to be a rock and roll guy. And he runs basically a children's facility down there.
Cool.
And Haiti is, again, it's a place where you're just like, You know, there's a lot of like
earthquakes did some stuff.
Oh, but there's so much beauty there as well.
Just like Nicaragua.
Yeah. It's a little worse than Nicaragua as far as like the visceral, like the dump. There's like a lot of dumps in Haiti, like La Chureca in Nicaragua. So, but you know what? But the cool thing is we can learn from those people as much. What can we learn? We can learn like we're doing right here. Mm-hmm. We don't do that as much. Just stopping and saying, bud, how you doing?
Yeah.
Because no, we're too busy. We gotta go.
Right, right. So in what way though? Because you're saying this before, and I found it pretty inspirational. When it came to what's going on when it comes to those people and their wealth, and how that affects their happiness.
Right. Well, I think we think in this, especially in countries like the States, and I'm a capitalist.
Okay? Yeah, as am I.
I am a capitalist.
Yeah.
But the reality is money is not going to give you joy after a certain level. But
you're a capitalist that thinks that money doesn't equal joy.
Right.
Nick.
Right.
Money buys me this cider.
Now,
and I seem pretty happy.
Now I can arrive in a limo, maybe depressed.
Oh, very depressed.
Better than walking.
That's your opinion. As you can see, I flip-flopped on the situation already.
Right.
But anyway, go.
But there's a level of simplicity that I have learned by traveling to these countries that, like, I'll give you an example. I was setting up on this little roof of the compound that we're in Haiti. Mm-hmm. And we're the only people that have any power. So it's pitch black out in the village. And I remember every night listening to, and I don't speak French or Creole, I didn't know what they were saying, but I could tell this man every night, he had, I think it was three kids that I could tell, and you could see like a little candle. And I could tell this father was sitting down with his kids, teaching them lessons, and they were laughing, and he'd sing them songs. And I just remember going, you know what? Sometimes we allow good things to crowd out the great things in life.
So what's a good thing? That crowds out the great thing.
You know, I think a good thing is, you know, hey, I just crushed a deal. Mm-hmm. And guess what, kids? We're going on the Caribbean cruise. That's a good thing.
That was a good thing.
But maybe if I would have...
Are you saying if you didn't close a deal and now you're telling the story to your kids because you don't have to work later to make sure that deal closed?
Right, right, right.
That's interesting.
Where sometimes you just... Another thing that struck me was... In that village in Haiti, they had to go to the river to get water. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my logical mind and my capitalist, I'm like, we gotta get a well here. That's simple. And I was talking to one of the, John, he's one of the facilitators. He's a Haitian guy, grew up in an orphanage, just an awesome dude. I'll show you a picture on my phone later. He goes, Nick, he goes, I agree with you. I do agree with you that we need a well. He said, but the one thing that I'll tell you, when I was a kid, my dad taught me about life when we'd go down to the river. Okay. And we'd spend all day there. We had to do our clothes. We had to bring our water. He goes, that's where I learned how to be a man. That's where I learned how to be a good father. Now he says, if we take that away, the question is, what are we filling that time with? Okay, because you've just solved a lot of time having to go down there. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I agree that we need to, but the question is, what are we filling that time with?
Did you have an answer?
No, because I was at first I didn't even think of that. I didn't even think. All I thought is we need a well up here so all these poor people don't have to go down to the river.
If we put in the well, this is fascinating. If you put in the well, then you alleviate how much time? How often are they going to the river?
Three times a week.
Three times a week. How long does it take to go to the river and back?
Four, 5 hours.
4 or 5 hours. Yeah. So you're taking, let's call it 15 hours for easy math,
mm-hmm,
a week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 15 hours. A typical work week is 40 hours. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about over a fourth, almost a third of your time for a working American week you now have. Now, if you were to give me 15 hours, I'd be like, well, now, instead of going mountain biking more or hanging out with my kids that I don't have yet, I can put that time towards making a second story to this building so that we can have even more clients and more great things and more people, right? Because that's the human desire that I find that can be a horrible desire that I think we all have, is the wanting of more.
Right.
So now we have the 15 hours and you're in a society. So now now I'll sit with my son while we're at the well for 4 to 5 hours and we'll talk about that life stuff. I would have to say that wouldn't happen. Yeah.
That's the question.
Well, how could it? Let's just sit in the living room and do what we need to do. It was like a beautiful side thing that came to going to the river. That was a beautiful side thing. It was like, the point is to go to get stuff clean and get water.
Yeah.
While we're doing that, you're here, we should talk.
Right.
But now, since this is happening, I actually have time to get that job at the bus. I could be a bus driver.
Right.
I didn't have that time before because we needed water. Now I can do a part-time bus driving position. We definitely aren't having those talks because I'm driving that bus.
Right. And I would say...
we need to get rid of our wells.
No, I would say, because I don't want people to think, you shouldn't get wells.
I'm kidding.
Because you should.
It's a great paradox, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we come down wanting to solve all the problems. Here was another point that was made. Because in Haiti, there is trash everywhere.
Sure.
Where you're like, it's almost apocalyptic-like. Like in Nicaragua, there's certain areas like the dump that has trash everywhere, but a lot of Haiti, especially Port-au-Prince, the whole area is like that.
Well, yeah, and the earthquake was
devastated that country.
Yeah, 200,000 people from a 7.0 earthquake is unheard of.
Right.
That's because their infrastructure is so weak. But there's got to be. I mean, what kind of cleanup would there have been to a country that would? A country that loses 200,000 people from a 7.0 earthquake, when Chile has an 8.5 and they lose 12.
Right.
And it's just because they know they're built for it. Japan is around the same thing. They have one that's literally 60 times less powerful than the one that happened in Chile. To have that happen and they lose 200,000 people, that's because the infrastructure is horrible. Right. And so now all this crumbles. Mm-hmm. Well, if it wasn't that good to begin with, and there's trash everywhere. Now what's
right?
Now there's magically going to be, unless you start putting wells in everywhere and people have the time to
clean
it up. Yeah.
But that was a question that was asked. Why don't they clean it up? And a friend of mine, he goes, you know, looking at this, they don't see that physical trash like we're seeing it. Kind of like we allow trash come into our life, and it's not physical trash, but it's other trash, addictions. So they're not seeing their physical trash, but I think sometimes we get caught up in the world. We don't see the non-physical trash that we're allowing to pile up around us. And I think we have to be real careful making sure that we're not so blinded that, yeah, it's not a piece of garbage, but the reality, if I just spent 2 hours watching trash that didn't help me in any way, and I do it all the time, and then I look up and I'm like, crap, I haven't done anything in a month, and I've allowed this trash to infiltrate my world. So it was a really interesting, my buddy said that, Jeff Edmondson, he was the guy that was pondering on that when we were all going, how do we get rid of all this trash?
So you're thinking he was pointing out trash in the mental state.
Yeah.
Am I following you?
Yeah. Whether it's a letting spiritual trash come into your world or, because I depending on what we believe, I think there are a lot of things in this world that are trash that you shouldn't do, but we do it all the time.
What is good?
Yeah, that we talked about that earlier. What is good?
Exactly. That kind of brings me. Have you ever this has been one thing I've been thinking about for a while. It's kind of been driving me nuts. But what is good? You ever heard of the urethra throw problem or the divine command theory? So divine command theory or the urethra problem, it was written by Plato and basically Socrates is at the courthouse and urethra's there and Socrates is waiting to go to courthouse because he's going to be learned that he's about to be tried for what will be his death, and urethra's there because he's going to prosecute his own father for murder. And Socrates is like, why are you doing that? And he's like, well, the gods say it's right. The gods say that it's pious and it is good, or pious is good, and it'd be impiety or it would be not good if I didn't do that. And so Socrates, it basically ends up going into a question and answer with him quite a bit and ends up creating this problem, this dilemma that hasn't been solved, and I don't think it ever will be solved 2,500 years later. And that is, well, is God good? Is what God does good because he says it's good? So is things pious or good because he says it is? Mm-hmm. That's one side. And the other side is it good because he's reading it from something? There's something that bounds him. There's some document that says this is good and you have to hold these people to this. Doesn't seem like that big of a deal until you decide which way you're going to go down that. Because if you go down the side of God or gods are doing good because it's because they say it's good, well, then it's actually not a question of good or not good at all. It's just a question of what do they want? Because if you're like, well, they only do good things. Well, I'm pretty sure God asked Abraham to kill his son. Mm-hmm. And there is times when there's a scenario if you go down that side, like it's good because God says, well, what if there's a scenario, Nick, where you're sitting and God comes in through the window and he says, Nick, and you're sure it's God. Like, this is God. He's got an iPhone that's not even out yet. His posture is straight. He's got minty fresh bread. I mean, this is God. And he's just like, I've been waiting for a while, and you've been following me really well. I'm waiting for the right time. But the Ten Commandments, that's actually, they're all supposed to be in reverse. So you do need to kill people and be adulterous and steal, amongst other things. Mm-hmm. And now go and do my bidding, and then he floats off. Right. And then you're sat there being like, okay, well, what should I do? Well, that on that theory of it, that is now what's good because he said so. Now, whether or not it is or not, according to that, that's what it is. Right. Okay, so then there's the other side, which is he's holding to something that's bounding him. But if you're in the belief that God created all things, mm-hmm. Whether they are on all things, meaning physical and morals, values, mm-hmm. like if he created everything, he created everything. So that's really hard to grapple with, that there's something else bounding him. And if there is, then there must be somebody that's put that together. So who then really is the God? So then you start going down that rabbit hole. And so Socrates came up with this, and it's like, what is good? And I've just been looking at that for the last like 4 days being like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. so then I think to myself, like when I say, you know, what is good, it's just like, how do you figure it out? Whether you're religious or not, like mm-hmm. where does it come from? And I was having this conversation with one of our team members, and he was saying, well, I think it's an inner compass that points in one way or another.
Well, first of all, I think if we could, because we don't know for 100%, no matter what. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's a thing for my value is faith. I have faith that my God is a good God, a righteous God, and I don't. There is not too many cultures out there that, unless it's been skewed by propaganda, mm-hmm. that. Murder is something that traditionally in the long term is a beneficial thing in the world.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean,
it's just a dilemma.
Yeah.
It's not something that's actually happening right now, I don't think. Not with Christianity, it's not. Yeah. I don't think. I'm pretty positive as I would hear about that if all of a sudden that commandment switched.
Right.
I'd be hiding shotgun in my closet.
I would. I think that there is interpretations out there that would say that killing is all right. I think it does happen.
Yeah.
And that's when people do bad things in the name of religion. Mm-hmm. Because I always tell my friends, I go, here's the one thing. I am not Jesus and I am not God, and I will always let you down. No matter how much I want to not let you down. So don't judge God based on my actions. Even if I say I follow him, I'm going to let you down as a human being. Mm-hmm. And that is the interesting thing. When you go to some of these third world countries where they don't have anything like we do, because the reality, me and you can have a pretty good life in the good USA and not really need God, really. Mm-hmm. What our minds think that we don't need God. But when you don't have, there's a pure joy knowing that, you know what? My God says things are going to turn out good. And let's just say I'm wrong. Well, if I believe it, I still have optimistic hope that that's going to happen. So whether I'm right or wrong, I'm still benefiting because yeah. I have this thing. It's always going to work out. Now, my personal belief, I believe that that is true. But even if I'm wrong, I'm still all right. Because when I had one of those days, I'm like, all right, God, you told me at the end of this day, everything in this life, everything's going to turn out good. I still have that hope. And that's part of kind of faith.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
So do you see that faith in third world countries? Are they mad at God?
No, it's amazing.
My God, there's all this trash everywhere. Right. I just had to sell my daughter to a garbage driver.
Right.
There's got to be a little bit of,
you know,
there's not. I don't know. I haven't been there.
Yeah. I see.
I'm not gonna put words in your mouth.
I actually see more, a lot of joy where you don't think joy should be. Mm-hmm. Because logically we're like, wow, this dude doesn't have anything. But he's sitting there with his kids with his little candle in his hut that he just, you know, hauled water 5 hours to be able to dump it on his head. And then he has to boil his water to eat his rice. But there's massive joy mm-hmm. because it's all of it for it's relationships. And I think we've lost a little bit of that.
Why do you think so?
You know, because we're fast. Our world's fast.
It is, isn't it?
As you know, I mean, I have two teenagers and a 9-year-old, mm-hmm. and they're all good kids, but man, they don't communicate much besides, I'm like, and I got to catch myself too, because I do business and I'm on my phone a lot, but that phone, that has got rid of that we're sitting, I mean, because we don't do this very often, where no. we're just sitting around talking anymore. No.
And you know what? You're right. I've been finding that, like, if we can question each other and, like, in good faith, in good conversation,
right.
like, having deep stuff, that's what makes you think more. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get too well thought philosophically in a text conversation with you.
No.
Like, I'm going to see your manners. I'm going to see where you're going and be like, okay. But not to digress too far, because you're saying we're going fast. And I agree. But I want to go back to that hut. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How could they be so happy? I'm playing devil's advocate.
Sure.
But still, how could they be so happy in a hut? So what if they have relationships? Don't you think they'd be a lot mm-hmm. better if they had like a carpet to stand on and maybe some shoes? And that well might be able to get them that?
You know, I think that this... No, I don't know for sure.
No,
I don't know for
the
sure.
The only thing I know is I don't know anything. So
yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah, we were talking about that. And I told you, at least you're striving for knowledge. In this world right now, 95 people don't.
Yeah.
I do believe that man, whether it was faith or whether it was just him knowing that his duty was to teach his children the meaning, the rules of life, he took massive pleasure in that, of teaching them. Mm-hmm. And they laughed, and it was, you know, simplicity. The older I get, man, when I was younger, I'm going to take over the world.
Yeah, no, I just got out of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, simplicity, man, is so nice.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
My realizations of simplicity and not needing more have been so amazing over the past year. Being content.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm like, I am able to mountain bike and I'm happy with that. And I am able to have a happy team and I'm really happy with that. And I'm in a house that's okay. Be nice to have a bigger one, but I really don't need that. And every time I think that, I'm like, why? You're pretty freaking... He's like, well, that more thing. What? No. What's the point?
Right.
So you could have a higher mortgage that you'd have to work harder for, mountain bike less, and then when you do have kids, spend less time with them because, oh, that sounded like a good idea at the time. Right. Made me feel real good for that week that I signed it.
Right.
Maybe the month after, I'm like, wow, look at all this space I'm never going to use. Got that third bedroom. Look at that. Never going to see you again.
Yeah, you just impressed the two people you didn't like anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Nice, Mitch. I got that. Yeah. Got that.
You know, we were in Mexico last year, and we were at a really nice place called Punta Mita. And I remember sitting on the balcony. My wife looked out, and we were on the beach. And she goes, you know what? The beach is the great equalizer.
I love that quote. Go on.
Yeah. Whether you have $100 or $1 million, those kids... were all the same, playing on the waves. It was the great equalizer because it was all the same. And the more I'm around that, the more I see the joy. You know, I just got off the phone a day ago with John from Haiti. Mm-hmm. And Haiti went kaput, so there's no teams going down to the facility. So he doesn't really have his job that he traditionally has. But you know what? When we were doing our little... Facebook Messenger, he's smiling, he has this big grin, and he's still I had a crappy day yesterday. Why? Because a couple deals went south. But I'm 100 times financially and security wise better off than John. But his smile crushed my smile for that day.
That's hard to do with you.
Yeah. And I'm like, what? I'm like, come on, what are you focusing on? What are you focusing on? And one of the things that I like to always say, no matter what happens, what can I find about this situation that's funny?
Funny.
Funny.
I always do good, but I like funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other day, I dropped my wife, my son and her went to Atlanta, and my daughter for his big basketball tournament. Dropped him off at the airport, drove like 15 miles, pulled into the gas station, turned off the car, got my gas, pressed the button, nothing. And it dawned on me, she has the keys. So I'm like, immediately I went ticked off. And then I remembered, what can I find in this situation funny?
I was pretty hilarious that you're stranded at a gas station.
Exactly. Exactly. So
I think just look at it from somebody else's point of view.
Where this guy's like, what an idiot. And I think those are mind hacks. And I think the more we can do that.
Is that what you did?
Yeah.
Look at it from somebody else's point of view?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is funny if it's not you.
Yeah, the gas attendant was like, what? He goes, I go, yeah, my keys are at the airport. And I'm hosed right now.
So how'd you get them?
My buddy. So I called my wife. She was still in the terminal. She gave the keys to Charlie, the security guard. Mm. One of my buddies went to the airport, picked him up. One of my other buddies came and got me. And then,
you met.
Yep.
And in Portland, that probably took 3 hours.
Yeah, it ruined half the day. But you know what?
I didn't ruin half the day. I gave you a hilarious story.
I had a good story to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I look at when it comes to bad things. I was just talking about adventures when it comes to hiking, mountaineering, mountain biking. And my definition of an adventure is when things go wrong, because that's where the stories are made. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to happen because typically it's pretty damn scary. Like, it has to deal with me and almost getting hypothermia and falling off the side of a mountain. But I get these big life lessons of never ever wearing cotton again when trying to do anything outdoors.
Right.
And learning things like bringing water. And then I have a great story. Like that story, if I were to tell it, go on for hours on all the horrible things and hilarious things and me giving up at life at one point.
Yeah.
But if I were to just climb a mountain and come back down, like, yeah, it was a great hike. It was beautiful. Yeah. Here's a picture from it. That's what I want to happen. But when it doesn't, don't get me wrong. I'm not like, oh, I want to try to kill myself.
Sure.
But it's it's what life is like made of, I think.
Most lessons, I believe, your biggest learning lessons, I think, are in when there's been some adversity.
I would agree. It's the biggest life lessons. Oh, one thing I wanted to point out, what I loved was when your wife said the great equalizer is the beach. Michael Sagru, he's a professor at Princeton. He's saying that philosophy is one of the great equalizers. Both, no matter how wealthy you are or how poor you are, you can participate in philosophy and get its benefits. So in Stoicism, you have Marcus Aurelius being the emperor of Rome, and at the same time, well, relatively same time, Epictetus, who was a slave. And they both are like two of the founding fathers, so to speak, of Stoicism. And this is where they are. But they both thought at the same playing field of like, and that's basically, that philosophy is just all about like, why don't complain about anything. There's no reason to.
Right.
Because there's only two things that happen in the world. Number one is things in your control.
Yep.
In which case you can control it. So I don't want to hear you complain about it because you could do something about it.
Sure.
Or two or things not in your control, which I also don't want to hear you complain about it because there's nothing you could do about it. So what's the point of complaining about it?
And you're focusing on something that you can't control. And you see that all the time with the, because I
traffic, weather.
Yep. A lot of young people that work on my team. I'm like, here's the thing. Focus on what you want. Okay, not what you don't have, and focus on the things that you can control, because it doesn't do any good to trust me, that's trial and error. In my life, I've focused on things that I couldn't control. But when you boil it down, life isn't that complicated if you boil it down. If you just, and you simplify, like I said, my candle continues to burn. And it's getting shorter and shorter. And I keep gaining
Mine's insight. Getting longer. I don't know what's going on. I'm getting good sleep or something. But like I'm going to live to be forever. It's great.
That's great. You got to tell me the secret.
There is no secret. Oh, the cider. But so anyway, so your candle's getting short. Yeah. It sounds all morbid. But
So
So Nick's going to die.
Yeah.
We're all going to die. That's one thing I know about everybody. Mitch is going to die. You're going to die.
Yep.
I'm going to die. Everyone's going to die. So get over it. It's nothing that special about it. Everybody does it.
Yep.
If anything, there'd be something more special about like finding oneself. Like, because not everybody does that. Yeah. Everyone does. People are worried about it.
And like, I think it's a problem. I mean, I don't think it's like one day you find yourself and go, I found myself. No, because I find myself and I lose myself maybe on minutes. I lost myself. There's I always tell my team, I go, hey, I lost something. And they're like, what? And I go, I've lost my mind. So they finally put this little brain outside my office. We have found Nick's mind. So and I think it's a daily, it can be an hourly. Where, you know, life, you know, here's our thing about success. It's this. And it just, you know, and we get there. Now, I believe this is success. You know, it's you go back and you go down and you go up. But one of the things that I've really recently is.
Well, I understand the success going, but what is this line that you're defining? Is that money?
No, I think it's a whole bunch of different things. And I think really, what are we shooting for? We want to be happy. And whatever that looks like to you, like if I love to travel. So let's say that I had no money, but I got to travel all over the world, but I had no money. And I got to stay at decent places and they fed me. And I didn't own anything. Am I rich?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's what I like to do. But I could, or I could, let's say I like to do that, and I stayed home all the time, but I had like 20, 30, 40 million bucks in the bank, but I never got to do any of that. But I have my 40 million. Am I rich?
No.
Depends. Yeah. For me, I wouldn't be rich, but for some people that would, that's what they want.
But unfortunately, those people don't know what they want. That's what it is.
Yeah, they think they do.
They think they do, and they think that when they get there, all their problems will go away. Right. But what they end up finding out is as they get closer and closer to that 20, 40 million, whether that's 200,000, a million, and maybe even it gets to be they hit that 40 million, let's just say that that's the mark out of the sake of this conversation. They're still as depressed as they were when they hit the 200,000 and the million and everything like that, because they thought that at that point, that's when I'll be able to have something that will make this feeling, this depression, this anxiety go away.
Right.
But actually, it just intensifies.
The whole, it's just different problems.
Different, bigger problems. More is at stake is actually what happens.
Yeah.
So if you can't get in tune with what's going on here, because that's all it is. That's why, in my opinion, I think that's why you had the family, the father being happy and not needing the carpet under his feet is just because he didn't have to worry about money and has family, and that's really what mattered. And that man is rich.
Yeah.
Oh, that man's rich because his worries are down to here. Yeah. He does have to make sure there's food's coming on the table and things of that nature, but he does make sure that happens.
Right.
Where when you end up getting higher and higher on the wealth chain, a lot of other people think they're like, well, when I make more money, that means that I won't have to work for anybody. I hear that a lot. I'll be free. No, you won't. Even if you own your own business. So right. I own my own business, and we're a 7-figure agency, and that's all good for you. But hey, I have 110 bosses. They're my clients.
Right.
That's just how it is. Yeah. I have 110 freaking bosses. I don't have one. Oh, you have three. I have 110.
Right. Right. And
as it gets bigger, the stakes get higher. Like, we get bigger clients that are worth it more, and that's really awesome. But if we screw up, then all of a sudden I need to figure out how to support our team of 23 people.
Right.
With one giant elephant that decided to cancel.
Right.
And the last thing I want to do, because it's morally and ethically not within what I want and what I try to lead by, is, well, we just let people go. I don't look at people as Excel numbers.
No.
I look at them as actual people with names and smiles and stuff they like to do.
Yeah.
And in now, in cases, because we're growing up, families.
Yeah.
Stevan's having a kid, and Keely has kids and stuff like that, too. So it's more than just that.
And there's a responsibility from a leader. And that's really what I think a leader is. That someone that will come in and look at that whole picture, and it's they know that it's their response, their actions, their behavior affects not just them, they affects their people, the family of that people, and it could affect generation and generation and generation. I like creating wealth. Not for what it can just do for me, but what it can do for others. Because I think I can help more people by the more wealth that I create. I can help more people.
I agree.
Okay. Does that mean that I there's people that don't have wealth that can help people as well? Absolutely. I think God gives us all our avenue, and He's allowed me to create wealth. And I have a duty to make sure that that wealth is helping create opportunities for others. That's kind of how I look at wealth. Because, you know, I could live in a trailer park and it doesn't matter to me. Simplicity.
Well, wealth, yeah, what you're saying, wealth helps you do good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's some things that are good, like health. Health just is good.
Yes.
So straight up, like, it's good to be healthy.
Right.
Wealth helps you do good. Right. It can also help you do really bad.
Exactly.
It's how you decide to use it, right?
Yep.
So I have no doubt about that. Of all the conversations that we've had that get as deep as this, that what you do with your wealth is create other opportunities for people. And in this case, like not only just people in like Oregon or the U.S., but Nicaragua and Haiti and things of that nature, which is more people need to do things like that, or more people just need to realize that there's more out there than just themselves.
Yeah. I always just take some action, and in the joy that you'll get, all those places that I go and I serve, the reality is those people traditionally help me more than I ever helped them.
How do they help you more?
I see number one, simplicity. I see massive faith, even when I'm not 100% sure if I would be going there if I was, you know, every day. Because I complain about all kinds of things. Even today, that I... But seeing simple pleasures, it always lightens my spirit. And it makes me realize how lucky I am and how grateful that I should be every... Even when my day sucks, is better in the, let's say, materialistic world than their phenomenal days. And it helps me have a better perspective where I'm like, come on, Nick, let's go. Mm-hmm. Come on, Keegan, my son, let's go. You don't have those problems. And also seeing the human spirit overcome things that I'd be like, how do they? Like my son, the first time I took him there, he was the same age as the girls that were at the V. He goes, you know what?
How old was he then?
Like the first time I took him there was like 13. He goes, Nick, those girls, I know he's heard their story. He goes, they just seem like me.
Does your son call you Nick?
No. I don't know why. I was talking to the yeah.
But anyway, they look like you.
He goes, they don't seem any different. And he goes, and I go, because the human spirit, with a little bit of hope and opportunity, and those girls got some hope and opportunity, it overcomes so much. Overcomes a lot.
Mm-hmm. What do you view as, what is a human spirit?
That's deep, bud. That's deep.
I don't know the answer. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. You know, with my faith, I believe it's the spirit that God gave you. It's that essence, because I don't believe it's when I die, it's done. I believe my spirit continues to live on.
Yeah, I believe that too. I just don't know exactly how or what, right. Nor does anybody.
No, we don't. Yeah. And that's that thing, that faith. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that when you do have that faith, even like I said, even if I'm wrong, it still helps me get through.
Yeah.
It's still, because I'm looking, I'm like, hey, my God promises a good thing at the end of this.
So your spirit is basically within you to do what?
I believe we all have a purpose. I believe sometimes it takes a long time to figure out what that is. Mm-hmm. But I believe everybody has a purpose. And if they can just connect with that, man, I think life just boom.
What do you think their purposes are?
I don't know, because I'm not them. I know what my purpose is.
What's yours?
Serve people and help kids.
How'd you find out?
By doing it. When I found out, because when I grew up, I had a depression. I remember when I was, how old was I? I was 21 years old, sitting in a kitchen with a handful of pills. And I was going to commit suicide.
No.
But, you know, God helped me through it. And I found my purpose.
Would you mind saying how he helped you through it? You don't have to.
No, I don't. I don't. At that time, I didn't have faith in God. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But looking back, even though I didn't believe in him, he believed in me. And he kept pushing me forward. He kept pushing me forward.
So there's something within your spirit or mind that was just like, said, don't eat those pills,
don't,
Nick.
Don't do it. Don't do it. And as I, because, you know, I always thought, hey, I'm going to be rich. I'm going to be powerful. And I started making money and I lost money. I made money. And I was like, man, it's just stuff. But when I really started helping, and it probably started with that cruise through the dump, that changed my life. Not saying that I don't have issues, because I had issues with depression all the way through my life. I'm not saying that I don't ever have it, but it's a lot less than it ever was before. And when you're focusing on others, I think it's really hard to get really, really down when you're out helping others. I think if we would, I think every person should go to a third world country and serve.
I agree. I need to take you up on. I wanted to go back to your point on how you feel better when you go and you help other people. Simon Sinek wrote a book on Leaders Eat Last, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, behind you there. I gave that to you, didn't I? No, I gave you a different book. What was the book you gave me? It was good.
I gave you Essentialism.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. So in Leaders Eat Last, that one was, let's see if I have these chemicals right, oxytocin,
yep,
dopamine, serotonin, and cortisol are the main chemicals that run through our brain. Cortisol is what creates anxiety, stress, fight or flight mechanism. Here comes a saber-toothed tiger. Dopamine is what we get when we smoke. We drink. Cheers.
Salute.
Yeah, dopamine. The phone that Mitch is on right now, he's getting dopamine hits right now, left and right. Ain't that right, Mitch? Mitch does a good job. I give him shit, though.
It's all right.
Anyway, you got the dope. So that's dopamine. It's like the wanting for more. It's brain hacking, said by Google. People have come out from like Google. It's literally like we engineer that thing to be like a freaking goddamn slot machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A dopamine drip. So drinking, smoking, addictions, mm-hmm. that. And then oxytocin is the chemical you get from hugging
mm-hmm.
Another human. It's mm-hmm. it's the explosion you get from that. It's the chemical that you get from basically doing good. Mm-hmm. If you pull over and help a stranger with a tire,
sure,
you will get a flood of it. If you go down to Nicaragua, I'm sure you're mm-hmm. going to get a flood of it from doing that.
Yep.
So it's a chemical release that has been biologically in our brains for mm-hmm. you're doing something selfishly, selflessly. Here's your reward. Problem is that's harder to do than the phone.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's I completely agree with you. Like looking out for other people. And having these kind of conversations is what helps like me realize that I need to be doing more of that because I donate mm-hmm. money, but I need to be donating more time. And that's the problem. I don't get an oxytocin release when I write the check. It's just like, okay, it's doing good. This looks good for PR.
Right.
And the kids need help. Okay. Yeah. But there's no oxytocin thing. Like when I cut into, I have done it a few times. I just need to do it more. But when I cut into my time of, hey, this Saturday is now going to help build this trail
mm-hmm.
as opposed to riding the trail.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, I'm like, I don't get that back. I can make a bunch more money. I could be like, hey, that check I just cut, I just quintupled it on this deal.
Right.
It's like
right.
it never happened. That time's gone.
Right. Right.
So when you actually give your time to do something mm-hmm. like that, it's saying mm-hmm. a lot. So it's saying a lot about who you are mm-hmm. as a person to be going down and giving so much time over the years to several third world nations and building homes for them mm-hmm. and maybe putting in wells.
Yes. You know, the funny thing is I will, sometimes I'll be down there and I'm like, I could hire three of these guys to do this job that I'm doing that I suck at. So I think we do also have to be careful on like going down and like me building a house does not help.
Yeah.
It helps me.
Yeah.
Just to be straight, I can't build a house. The guy probably like knocks it over and starts over and he's probably just laughing, but it makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So again,
that's funny because you're really good at selling houses. Yeah.
No.
I couldn't build a house in my life either.
And I think that we all have different responsibilities. My job isn't to be a missionary where I'm all the time down at there. What I like to do is I like to come down and hug the kids, take them to beaches, do that more so than build a house. Okay. Because that's how I'm wired. I want to hug those kids. I want to let them know that we love them. And guess what? It really makes me feel good too. So that's why I said, I always get more than those kids do, probably. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that the money that we've raised through Sell a Home, Save a Child, selling houses hasn't made a huge, huge difference, because it has. But we also got to look, it's not just money. I think when you have a relationship with someone, then you care. You care about that. I care about John.
Absolutely.
I care about my daughters. When we met Kenzie and his little brother that lived in a ravine outside that thing, they still ask, how are they doing, Dad? Because they built a relationship. And they'll go back. Mm-hmm. And they make sure that they donate a little bit of their money that they make. And they give back because now they have a relationship with those two boys. They wouldn't have been able to get if they hadn't went there. And experience that, hey, these kids have nothing, but they're exactly like us. Exactly. They're just kids. Mm-hmm. They want to have fun, just like us. And then you start going, okay, hey, I have a responsibility. I always tell my kids, you were born on third base. I mean, by the grace of God, you were born on third base. Mm-hmm. And you did nothing to deserve that. Now, let's get somebody to first. And don't go to first. You can stay on third base or get home. So
tell me more about Sell a Home, Save a Child. How does it work?
So basically, it's my team. We started doing that when I got back from the garbage dump. We started donating, trying to make sure that we could help get Via Esperanza built. Mm-hmm. And about 3 years ago, I was
thinking, Via Esperanza, what is that?
Village of Hope, okay. Which is where the girls go. To get educated and learn and stuff like that. So 3 years ago, I was like, you know, most people want to help, but it's like they don't know what to do. They don't know how. So I'm like, I'm going to try to help them have a way to help and also help build a tribe. Mm-hmm. Because when a business, I believe, has a purpose, I think not only does it bring people to that business because they're like, this is awesome. We're doing something more than just selling houses or building websites. We're doing something more than that. And so I reached out to a buddy of mine, Eric Hatch, that had a big real estate team, and he was doing some stuff in Haiti. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, let's take this and invite other agents to be involved. So right now, I think we're at like 42 members of agents across the country. We have really cool fundraisers. We just did a sumo wrestling. These are big, giant sumo wrestlers. Mm-hmm. We party with a purpose. We had a big party in a downtown LA rooftop. Raised about $70,000 for the kids. And so it's just basically we plug and play. Hey, you can... Here's the kids. We try to have one trip a year where I take agents and mortgage guys and we go down so they can have a relationship with those kids. And they basically, that's when they buy in. Once you've met that kid and know that you have an opportunity to change their lives, then they're bought in and they're members to our community forever.
Sweet. So when did you first start to like feel like this is picking up steam?
Probably about a year ago. And I think it's baby infancy. I think we've raised right now in the last 3 years about $1.5 million.
That's a lot.
But I think it's just at its baby infancy. Mm-hmm. And I think it can blow up because, again, I truly believe most people want to help.
I believe you're right.
It's just give them a vehicle and make it easy.
So how do people help then that want to?
Well, for agents, they just become members. Mm-hmm. Any of our clients, they basically, when you work with our team and other Sell a Home, Save a Child members, you know that a percentage of that commission that you're paying an agent anyway, mm-hmm, is going back to help kids in Haiti and Baltimore, Maryland, and Oaxaca, Mexico, and Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. So I think that you just get some dopamine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because you're like, hey, this is cool. We're making a difference. Mm-hmm. Not only here, and people ask me all that all the time. They go,
that's Nick, how they get the oxytocin.
Yeah, exactly. They go, why are you going outside the country? And I go, why do I have to choose? I do stuff in the States and I don't think I have to choose. Mm-hmm. I don't think it matters.
No.
I think it. I don't. It doesn't matter if you only do the States. It doesn't matter if you do this. Just do something. I love people that complain about the way our world is and don't do jack. That is one thing. I remember this. I was in.
I can't. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, you're just like, dude, you're sitting here complaining about how sucky our world is, but you're not doing anything but complaining. What's the solution? What can you do?
Yeah, I love people who complain about global warming, and then they get in their, like, Yukons, and then they, like, eat all the meat in the world, and they, like, basically... They're like, God, yeah, we got to do something about the planet, and this is horrible and everything like that, but I'm going to get on my private jet and drive my Yukon to the private jet, and I'm going to eat a whole lot of meals. I'm just like, okay, I'm not somebody who gets on a soapbox about vegetarianism and veganism, but if you are somebody that's complaining about that, then that's one of the best ways you can help. And then, like, get a freaking Tesla or a Prius. I mean, if you drop the thing and then stop flying. Oh, but I need to fly. Well, the world needs to be saved too, doesn't it?
Right.
I mean, which one is it going to be? Right. So stop complaining. It's something you can do.
Yep.
So I don't want to hear anything about it. You can control it a little bit. So do something about it.
Right.
And then instead of just saying, oh, this is awful, just be like to your friends, be like, hey, this is things I've been doing and I think it's helping. And then that might influence one out of 50, but it's better than none because I bet you none of them are going to start doing something when you just complain about it.
Exactly.
That's the problem that happens in this whole dichotomy is people end up going down these freaking tangents and they're like, this is what's wrong, but nobody wants to do anything about it.
Yeah.
But you can. And the thing that drives me most insane is people, a lot of time when it comes to this global warming thing I'm going on, is they're looking for the government to do something about it.
Yeah.
But I look in our recent history of amazing things that have happened in our society that the government had nothing to do with. Right. One is the rise of organic foods. There's no laws that said we need organic foods.
Right.
The market just said we want organic foods, and now there's complete chains that are built around it. You have Whole Foods, natural grocers, Safeway is now mostly organic. Fred Meyer is a huge organic section. Like, organic is the thing. There's no laws. That was just us saying we want to buy that because we don't want to eat poison.
Right.
That's all it was. And now this next one is just this vegan movement. It's just like all of a sudden Beyond Meat, all this stuff's happening. There's, again, no laws.
Right.
People are just like, this is what I want to be eating. I'm like, okay. So stop looking at the government to fix your world problem. The market, your vote is your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Your vote's your wallet, period.
Yep.
Like, it does way more than who you're going to elect for president. You don't want there to be a lot of carbon emissions? Stop driving.
Right, right. And have some self-responsibility. If you're putting your faith in someone else, besides, for me, God, if you're putting your faith in a human being to solve your problems, that's why, who are you going to vote for, Nick? And I go, well, here's the reality. Whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, I'm going to be all right. Because I do not put my faith that they're going to change my life.
Have you ever sat and been like, okay, because... You know, you run a business as do I, and you're like, man, I can't. I'm not that new rule, that new law. I'm out.
Right.
I'm done. Because we've seen a lot being in Oregon.
Oh yeah.
But you're still in business. I'm young as heck. I mean, I'm only in business 5.5 years, and there's been some crazy stuff, but I don't go, well, that's it. Guess I'm out. I go, okay, this is a new rule book to play by. Yep. I'm not going to get upset about it. What's the point? I can't control it.
You can't control it.
All what is I the can opportunity? Do is what, I can...
what is the opportunity now? Because there's when change happens, and remember, I told you I'm a grinder. I'm old school.
Yeah.
And you said you actually gave me. You said you're kind of new school. So I really appreciated that.
Anytime. Anytime, new Nick.
Yeah. There's always opportunities for people that stay and say, what can I? Maybe it cuts your business in half. But guess what? You learn to get better.
Mm-hmm.
You learn when adversity change happens. Like in my industry, I'm in the real estate industry. There is so much change happening with Wall Street money, billions and billions and billions. There is over 250 times the amount of venture capital coming in real estate, trying to get rid of my job than there was in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So, and people are freaking out. they're either freaking out, thinking we're the way of the travel agent. And remember,
which is
they're
coming
still
back, by the way.
Yep, they're still
no, it's actually coming
yes,
back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or they're burying
it's like
their
vinyl.
Heads.
Yeah. Travel agents like yeah, vinyl, exactly. Man.
That's me. I'm like the vinyl record.
New Nick.
Yes. So you either bury your head where you try to ignore that this isn't gonna affect our industry, which it is, or you just quit. I don't
obviously
choose
obviously you quit.
I don't choose either one of those.
Nor should you.
Yeah. So I just try to get better.
Yeah. The last thing that a lot of people, including myself, I have to admit, have complained about was the Kate Brown passed bill of Oregon businesses that do over $1 million get, as of 2020, we're going to be taxed 0.6% on gross. Mm-hmm. That sucks. But as I've been sitting here having this conversation with you, I've been thinking, it's like, well, what's something I haven't complained about? I'm like, well, buddy, you complained about that. That's true, you did. And you've been on camera complaining about that. Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what I'm thinking right now, the positive based on what you were just saying is, mm-hmm. What if there is a big positive to that? Because a lot of businesses are going to end up moving mm-hmm. out of Oregon due mm-hmm, to that. Once mm-hmm. that comes into effect, they're going to be like, you know what? Idaho is real nice, and so is right. Nevada, and so is Montana, and see ya. This is big tax.
Yeah.
That does not mean that everybody is going to move with it. There's going to be people here that still have talent. And right now, finding good talent is a harder thing to do. But right. if all of a sudden businesses are leaving, I am going to have an easier time recruiting people. Mm-hmm. And I might even have an easier time getting them for a cheaper value because the guys that were taking them away from me, that pay cut is gone.
Sure.
So there's, I was like, hey, the people that I couldn't dream of affording, yeah. that might actually allow me to afford them, which might allow my business to grow further. That's something I just thought of now. And maybe, yeah. and I'm going to try to see, maybe I pursue that because I'm not going to, I love Oregon. I love mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm. You'd have to make it that you're going to tax my business 50%. I'd be like, this doesn't pencil.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry. At that point.
Right.
But, yeah, it's finding the good in anything. Yeah. And that could be a major good. There could be other hidden ones I don't even
what's
know
about
right about now.
What's funny about that?
I mean, what's funny about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, what's funny about that?
What's funny about that is people are in other states laughing at me.
Yeah, there you go. You know? But, again, even though we don't like, I don't like it, I don't think you like it.
I definitely don't.
Yeah, but we can laugh about it. It's all yeah. right.
No, it's okay. I'm still
it's all right.
I'm still being.
Yeah.
More money, more problems.
Yeah.
Right? And my friend was laughing. He was like, oh, I'm sorry, bud. You have to deal with that $1 million problem. I'm
right.
just like, yeah, that's kind of funny. You're yeah, right.
It is.
Right. I was like, you're right. Yeah, okay, I'll shut up.
Right.
He's like, I have other problems. Yeah, okay, you proved your point. I'm going to shut up.
But we have to have those conversations because if we don't, then we don't. Keep thinking about it. But when you think about it, you're like, yeah, you're right.
No, absolutely. And that's the great thing that we're having right now is an actual conversation that's being recorded and sound recorded and going to be placed all over the But we do this all the time anyway. Right. And I think that's why it's flowing so well. Right. I know that's why it's flowing so well. The good that we can find in that, what's funny in that is a new term that I'm going to be, I've always been looking for a good, but what's funny in that is going to be something mm-hmm. that I think I'm going to be using for some time because it's going to bring more humor, it's going to bring more laughter, and there's a reason why laughter has been proven to like set back diseases and sometimes mm-hmm. even kill them, why Patch Adams was a thing. I mean, that there's a lot to that, so why not bring it around more? Like, hey, what's funny about the fact that like I literally just flipped head over heels on this route on a mountain bike and like twisted my headset?
Right.
Well, if somebody else saw that, that must have been looking really funny because this just happened yesterday and I cleared this bridge. So there's this bridge that overlooks this creek, and I'm always like, I've hit this thing like 15 times, but 70% of the time I'm like, you know, I'm walking over this bridge because it's like make your mountain bike go over yeah. something like this over on a bridge, and if you fall, which I have before, it hurts.
Yeah.
And so today or yesterday I was just killing it on it. I'm like, I'm feeling this. That bridge is coming. I'm gonna hit that thing. And so I did. I'm like, yeah, and I hit it fast too. And then this root problem comes after that. And I know all about that root problem. I've never ever fell on a root problem. But today, after doing that, I don't know what it was, but just flew off the freaking bike into the bushes and did that to my hand. And
That's like, now you got street cred.
Yeah, yeah. Now I have street, cred. And I was just, and it ruined my Strava time. And now, I wasn't thinking of this now, but I'll think of it the next time. I was like, that must have been really funny if anybody saw that.
Right, right. Because it would have been funny to watch. Because
you just hear me go, yeah. Because yeah. I was literally like, I knew nobody was around. So I was like, yeah, the bridge. And it was like 100 feet later, down goes Frazier.
You're done.
Better way to look at life. What's funny,
what's funny about it?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Thanks, Nick.
I stole that. I stole that from somebody. I don't know who I stole it from.
Don't we all steal everything from everything?
Yeah.
I mean, everything I've been talking about, philosophy, science, that's all from like Socrates or Marcus Aurelius, or you're stealing stuff from God. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's all right, though. But that's okay, though. Like, when people are like, oh, yeah, they took that. Like, that's what we do. We take things and we make things better. Facebook wasn't, they didn't just make a computer.
Right.
They make the internet. Like, let's improve on that. Let's make this better. Let's do that. Let's make this philosophy and improve it and apply it to this and that. I had an interesting conversation with a team member today. He's just like, yeah, sometimes I look at computers and I'm just like, we were able to make rocks play Angry Birds. I'm like, what? I'm like, you're right. And I'm like, yeah, they are rocks. It's just silicon and freaking quartz and copper.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of elements that are in rocks, and we play Angry Birds on rocks. I wanted to jump into something a little selfish.
Okay.
Okay. Mitch will be able to throw this up on the screen.
I gave you. I know.
You said left. I want to know why.
No, I said right.
Oh, you said right.
I said right.
Oh, Jesus Christ! All right, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
I know. Wait a minute. Did I say? No, I said right.
Well, if you're saying right now, then you're saying right. If you're going right, you're
no, right. No, I said right.
Okay.
And I like the font of The Habit.
I get what you're saying because it's cursive.
Yeah. And I don't know why I like it. It's just when I look at it,
And you read Habit right away.
Yeah.
So here's a problem that I'm running into with that. There's a few problems. One is I think it looks better than the one on the left.
Mm-hmm.
My partner, who designed both of them, definitely likes the one on the right more. The vote that we've done across LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram have come back pretty much somewhere around 80% left, 20% right. I think the one on the right would look so much better on swag.
Mm-hmm.
I know it would. Like, that script is going to look better. However, I think that what I'd like us to push when we launch this thing is going to be that pepper.
Mm-hmm. No, the pepper is definitely.
Yeah. I think that pepper is going to be the social media icon. I want that pepper on a hat. I don't really care about the script too much, so I don't get caught up on that. What I get caught up on is, unfortunately, the amount of people have commented that it's easier to read the one on the left.
Yeah.
Because they're not able to really keep up with the cursive. I've had people say, does that say rabbit?
Mm. And I could see if you put it on anything besides something that is stable, like a shirt, you're not going to be able to read it.
I guess, man. And they don't teach cursive anymore. They haven't for, I think, the American education thing has been over 7 years.
Hmm. Interesting. I can't write anyway, so.
Well, I don't write. I mean, they try to teach it to me, but I mean, you can't fault the American education system for not teaching cursive. What's the point?
Right.
We type.
Right.
I mean, luckily for me, I have horrible handwriting,
yep.
And I'm living in an age where I don't need to write.
Sure.
I don't even need to have a John Hancock anymore. DocuSign makes DocuSign. a really good Bud Torquem.
Yep.
Really good Bud Torquem. Much better than mine.
That's why I like video email, because it doesn't. Then I don't look like an idiot, because this guy can't spell the. What the hell? Yeah, so.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like talking about that. How do you do video email? I want to do video email more. I do it a few times, and my team members are like, this is awesome, because it captures everything, right?
Yeah.
There's no emotion lost.
Exactly. You don't lose that meaning. And I think, like, for us and my team, it's a differentiator. People want to work with people.
Weird.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
People want to work with, some of my agents, they don't want to do it. They want to type out their long email that no one's going to read anyway.
No.
But a 10 seconds, hey, just was a pleasure meeting you, bud. We look forward to serving you. Okay. You can see my emotion, my energy. And for me, why I think it's, beautiful is because I couldn't have spelled any of that out, what I just told you.
I love that you just... So anyway, so in the what do you use?
We use the program called BombBomb.
BombBomb?
Yeah.
BombBomb.
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 Bomb. Two bombs.
Yeah, two
Got
bombs.
Got it. Mishki, looking at that BombBomb? Hey, looking at BombBomb?
Yeah.
I want to, because I've done it a few times, but it's a very time costly process. I take a video from my phone and like attach, like, oh no, you need to do a Google Drive link because it's a large email format. I'm like, okay, fine. And it's like, oh, that didn't really work that well. And if it was easier, I would do it more. So BombBomb didn't know they're going to get some free publicity, but there they go.
There they go.
Yeah.
I should be a spokesman. They should pay me a royalty.
They should.
Yeah. BombBomb, if you're hearing, you owe me a royalty.
BombBomb.
BombBomb.
All right. So video email. What members of your team don't want? I guess they must be a little. Ooh, I'm gonna guess. Can I guess which members don't?
Sure.
Do it? I don't know your team members by heart. I'm gonna guess the younger ones.
It's a little of both. The younger ones, the reason they don't want to use it because they think they have to be perfect. And they think they have to, you know, script exactly what you're saying. I'm like, no, just
be you.
Just be you. And one of my more seasoned, and I'm a seasoned.
Seasoned new agent. Nick.
Yeah, seasoned new Nick. He likes his emails. I'm like, man, I'm just telling you, you're not differentiating yourself. People want to see who they're going to be dealing with.
So what else are you doing to differentiate yourself in a crowded market of the Portland region?
You know, I think it's just we've built a tribe. People know what we do with the kids. And we try to just love on our clients, take care of them, make sure that they know that we are going at 110% for them at always. Do we always get 5-star reviews? Absolutely. We always, I mean, one of my agents, his brother, he sent me an email. He was all mad. And I could tell him and his brother are, and I was like, oh man, I should have known that from the start that it was brothers. You know how like sometimes family can just, you know, and I knew that but I should have been more involved in making sure that everything went perfect for him. But it's a contact sport. If you don't want to be in that's how old school guys like myself can stay alive, because I think there's an art there that is being lost with technology that people don't, you know. I'm like to my agent, no, get on the phone and have a conversation in an important aspect of a negotiation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So picking up the phone is a big differentiator.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a weird differentiator.
It's crazy.
But it's true.
Here's an example. We will get offers on transactions, big transactions that have multiple offers.
Mm-hmm.
And 80% of them, the agent doesn't even call. They just send it in. And with a little email. But the people that are winning are calling up, hey, bud. Hey, I want to make sure that, you know, my client loves this house. What will it take for us to get in first place? If you do that, my girl that basically handles all the negotiations, she's going to put you at the first, because you're invested in that process. If you just send it in with an email.
Negotiation for a house.
Yeah.
Because it's how crazy the market is.
I think
right
negotiations in anything.
Yeah.
You better get on the phone.
Yeah.
No,
as I do. I don't know a negotiation without being on the phone. That kind of blows my mind, actually.
Yeah.
But
all the time we get offers with no conversation. And then, like, I had this lady call me today. We had two offers on this property. She had said that 2 days ago, she said that she was going to make an offer and nothing. And she sent an email today. Hey, my clients are taking an offer. And I saw my girl, well, we've already accepted. Well, why didn't you call me? Was it our responsibility? That wasn't our responsibility. And the fact is, we left you a message letting you know. I'm like, man, that is doing a disservice to your client.
Yeah. It's a technology like wormhole going.
You use technology to help make things more efficient. But yeah. you can't only rely on technology to do your job.
Have you ever given any clients like brutal honesty on whether or not they should buy or not buy a certain house?
Many times.
The point where they were like, why are you saying this?
Yeah, we just did, and this was tough. I was in Mexico, and we sold these two properties combined were $2.2 million. And I'm just like, yeah, this is great. I'm down here playing some golf. The wife, I could tell in her voice. I'm like, what's going on? And she goes, I think we want to back out. And I'm like, oh. I mean, it was a big deal. Yeah. I spent like 2 hours trying to negotiate back and forth. And I was like, wow. And so I just said, you know, my gut was like, oh, gosh. I'd already spent that money. I'm going to the Caribbean. but so basically they were in contract, literally in contract. So then I spent the next 2 hours talking to the agent and getting on the phone with the other buyers, explaining the reason why they now didn't want to sell. And would they please let them out of the contract? Because I believe if you're going to be in any business long term, if you take care... We screw up. Sometimes we screw up.
Yeah.
And if you just say, man, but I'm sorry, dude. I totally screwed up. And I know you're totally upset and you feel that I've let you down. And this is the solution. You don't care that I'm sorry. I want to tell you, you feel that I've let you down. And here's the things that the reasons why. Whether it's true or not, I'm going to acknowledge your feelings. And then I'm going to try to solve the problem. I'm not going to just say, if I screwed up and it was my fault, I'm going to say I'm sorry. And when I do, I'm going to say, okay, but if I just say I'm sorry and I don't find a solution, you're like, I don't care if you're sorry. You got to fix this problem. So, yeah, I didn't even know how we got down that road.
I was just talking about like exactly what you're talking about, like being able to surprise people and
yeah.
And be honest and stuff like that, but you basically are able to
all the time. Yeah, if it really doesn't make sense. I remember back in the day when the market was crushed. There were so many times I'm like, don't sell. The bank can't take your house like in 30 days, mm-hmm. and get them to work with you because you really want to stay, right? If you can,
sure.
And they will work with you. So, and I think that's what staying power. You know, I've been in the business 20 years and just treating people, serving people like that's all you do.
So being in business 20 years, probably going to be the last question. We're running out of time, but you've seen the signs of market going up and market going down. Some point it's got to go down again.
Yeah, it can't go up forever, right?
Pretty much. So, yeah.
Economically, there is no reason that it should go down.
Why?
Because there is no nothing in the economics right now says that something should happen. Okay. With us keeping interest rates as low, it's kind of, it's kind of artificially low. Mm-hmm. And that's helping because the overall Oregon and Southwest Washington market is down year over year from 2018 to 2019. But if you go history, we are on a really long run of really, really good things.
Sure.
So what is going to make that change? There's nothing that says that there's anything out there, but I'm pretty confident that it will happen.
Oh, I know it will happen.
Yeah, when?
Yeah,
history. What's going to happen? Yeah. What is going to trigger? Is it going to be some trade war? Is it going to be changing of political stuff? Who knows?
I think student debt's gonna cause the next one.
Yeah. Or with all the Wall Street money pouring in and buying houses, and then the market shifts and now there's a glut of properties that they have to get rid of because they've lost all their money from SoftBank, mm-hmm. And they can't continue to lose money for month and quarter and year over year over year, and so there's that other little bubble. Hmm. Will that be it? There's a lot of smarter people than me that don't know that, so I'm going to just say, I know it, I just don't know it.
Well, no, I don't Well, Nick, it's been a pleasure, my friend. Always. Thanks a lot, man. It's a great conversation, philosophically induced with some ciders.
Yeah, a couple of ciders. It's good.